Vandeham Shri Guru Shiveta Padakamalam Shri Guru Inda Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagajatam Sahagana Rajmanatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sagadhutam Parajana Saitam Krishna Jajana Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shiva Shakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagat Pate Obeisha Govita Kanta Radha Kanta Dr. Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hare Kriye, Antha Kaldadaru Vyasya, Viva Sindhu Vigarija, Adhidana Padavidyo Vaishnavesyo Namo Nama, Shri Krishna, Taitam Nipavuna Vidhanam, Shri Jeta Gadadhar Suprasadhi, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, I leave time at the end for questions, so please have some ready. Now I'll continue on the topic that was discussed yesterday, continuing discussion of the revolutionary preaching spirit of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and of his very strong, uncompromising attitude, his dedication to the truth, that the truth should be served and told under all circumstances. He didn't think that only he should speak like that. He wanted his disciples to do also. Some of his disciples were afraid to bring people they were preaching to see their guru. Because they were thinking, if we bring them to him, then he'll burn them up, as the ISKCON lingo goes. They're afraid that we bring this man and he's giving donations, and if we bring him, then he'll speak the truth to him and then he'll stop giving donations. We find the same thing goes on, even today, in our ISKCON. Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he appreciated daring disciples who took risks in preaching and did not compromise. He referred to those who compromised as good for nothings. Or in Bengali, Shade Goba, which means bull's dung. There's an equivalent term in not so polite English. Bull's dung. That means, that's a term in Bengali which means something useless. It's just like you see, cow's dung is very purifying, and it's a sacred object, but bull's dung isn't. It doesn't have the same quality. It's not purifying in the same way. So, bull's dung, if you bring just like for the sacrifice, you have to bring some cow's dung, you bring some bull's dung instead. It means you've got goba in your head. You've got your head's full of dung. So he would refer to those who compromise as bull's dung. Or in English, he would also say, no cementing polish. That this means that sometimes you might see some plaster becomes cracked and you just put some cementing polish in to try to close the crack, but no cementing polish means that if there's some misconception or wrong philosophy, you shouldn't try to support it by specious arguments, but rather smash the whole thing and put the right thing in the place. He warned his disciples that a flatterer can be neither a guru nor a preacher. One who flatters others, he cannot be a preacher. There are some instances of this. Another saying of this. Don't speak to please the janata. Janata means the public, people in general. But to please Janardana. Janardana means Krishna. So just like one of his sannyasis, he brought some donation from a rich man. And Bhakti Siddhanta, he would go to people and say that, oh, you're a very pious person and your wife is just like Lakshmi or something like this. But Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, you bring a donation, he said, you brought a donation, but did you speak Harikatha? Did you speak to them? Did you tell them what is the truth? Simply by flattering, if we take a donation, that will not benefit the person. We have to act for the benefit of others. One time, he was wanting to build one temple, and he said, we need 1 lakh in paisa. 1 lakh of rupees, 100,000 rupees in paisa. So in those days they want 100 paisa to have a different system of paisa, annas, like this. How many paisa in one anna was it? 16 paisa in one anna? And then 4 annas in 1 rupee. So 64 paisa in 1 rupee. So he said, I want 1 lakh of paisa. That means that 6,400,000 paisa. So actually someone, one person donated 3 lakhs. Of course nowadays lakh of rupees, it's just, you know, it's Pepsi money. For those who drink Pepsi. It's among, at least in among the frivolous, rich class, lakh of rupees throw here and there. But in those days a lakh was a lot of money. The rupee was a lot of money. So, but anyway, one person donated 3 lakhs, which was more than enough. But he said, actually I wanted a lakh of rupees. Then so many people could be benefited by all of them donating. And also, instead of going to one man and he gives so much, then you have to go to so many people and preach to them all to give their 1 paisa each. So, he didn't accept any deviation from the truth. Even if someone was very close to him, or even if they're a very eminent, respected person in society, he didn't compromise with their untruth. If there was anything slightly wrong, just like he said, I'm the proofreader, you'd find the slightest mistake. He didn't like the slightest mistake in spelling and publications, what to speak of the slightest mistake in philosophical understanding. Even the subtlest non-truth in any theory, you would find it. Dissect it, destroy it. He was not for the, I'm reading here from my manuscript. He was not for sectarian, non-sectarian coexistence, conciliation or syncretism. That means we all live happily with our different appearance, with our different theories. His method of conciliation with others is that if we say that, well, we should all agree, we should come to some agreement. So his method of bringing others, of entering into agreement with others, is that they should agree with him. No compromise. He spoke against mushy tolerance of nonsensical ideas in the name of Irenic religious harmony. Irenic means that which promotes peace, that we'll all live peacefully. You talk nonsense, I talk nonsense, we'll all talk nonsense, and we'll all live very peacefully in a nonsensical, mushy, meaningless harmonic situation. So he spoke against this. This idea that we can all live in harmony peacefully in the material world. Anyway, he dismissed that. That's a bogus idea anyway. That we shall all live peacefully together and tolerate each other. It's an impossible dream unless people are prepared to give up all different varieties of cheating religion and surrender to Krishna. There's no question of peace or harmony or any such thing. Trying to pursue peace and harmony, just like Prabhupada, he gave the example that if you get a room full of dogs, so you're going to promote peace and harmony, they're all going to bark and fight with each other. That's what dogs do. So if people are in dog consciousness, Prabhupada said this about the United Nations. So if people are in dog consciousness, then how are you going to make you can pass resolutions, but there won't be any peace. So Prabhupada said the United Nations is like a group of barking dogs. Those were in the days when people, United Nations, they thought, oh, this is something very wonderful, something very good. It's promoting peace in the world. But Prabhupada immediately pointed out that it's just a bunch of barking dogs. There's no question of any peace. And another time Prabhupada was invited to a religious conference on how we could all come together and appreciate each other's views, and then all the different religions could promote peace and harmony. And Prabhupada, he was... There's no question of peace. There's no question of promoting peace through all your different varieties of concocted religions. You do what I say, you chant, you surrender to Krishna, then there can be peace. So he wasn't, but Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wasn't for this kind of peaceful harmonizing and living together, tolerating each other, no. Rather, he did not tolerate anything that was against the truth of the matter that we are all eternal servants of Krishna, and we are all rascals, that's why we're in this material world, and we should simply surrender to Krishna. And this is the only path. Not that commonly propagated, and still now, especially in Bengal, jato mat tato path. There's many opinions, that many paths. Or all paths lead to the same goal. No. One path leads to Krishna, and all the rest lead back to repeated birth and death. So we can say all paths lead to the same goal. Yes, they all lead to punarapi jananam, punarapi maranam, repeated birth and death. But the one path we should take, mame kam sharanam raja. This he repeatedly preached, and that any other attempt, real harmonizing is only possible by getting in harmony with Krishna. And getting in harmony with Krishna means surrendering to Krishna. And that will automatically fulfill everyone's self-interest. Whereas any other attempt at harmonizing, however noble seeming, truth, justice, liberty, what is that? Liberty, fraternity, egalite, what is this French Revolution, and they all killed each other, guillotined each other, so many things, in the name of liberty, egality, fraternity. So however noble sounding it may all seem, it will simply, if it's not any attempt at peace or harmony in this material world, if it's not on the platform of surrender to Krishna, which it almost always isn't, will simply engender further rivalry, envy, and competition. Because its basis, the very basis of any endeavor in this material world, except the endeavor to surrender to Krishna, is an endeavor on the platform of envy of Krishna. So it cannot give rise to anything else but envy. Got that? Any endeavor in this material world, except that to surrender to Krishna, is undertaken on the basis of envy of Krishna. That is the axiom, or that is the principle of existence in this material world. So any attempt at so-called peace or harmony in this material world, without that of surrendering to Krishna, can simply give rise to further envy and rivalry and competition, even if we mouth such words as tolerance, harmony, peace, love. That's why it's useless just to, you know, some people say, well, just smile. And they have some formula like this. Just smile. And that's great. That's something wonderful. That's a great contribution to human society. Or be happy. There's this rascal, Ravi Shankar, so-called. Not the sitarist, but the yuppies guru of India.
Art of
going to hell. Anyway, they're all going to hell, but he's helping them to go to hell with this. I read his, what is his, they asked, well, what's his philosophy, what's his thing, what's his teaching? He said, I want to put a smile on everyone's face. What a rascal. He's supposed to teach, as a sadhu, he's supposed to teach the truth. And the truth is that this material world is miserable and we're all suffering here for a lack of surrender to Krishna. But he wants to smile, enjoy, be happy. He wants to reinforce our position in this material world and help us to become more convinced of the illusion that we can be happy in material life. Therefore, he's not a sadhu at all. He's a complete cheater. Any sadhu should simply speak the truth, that this material life is miserable, and if you're looking miserable, that's right, because you should be miserable unless we're surrendered to Krishna, so surrender to Krishna. But all these so-called sadhus are simply cheap, and people think, oh, this is something very, very wonderful, you see, very nice, he makes people smile, he makes people feel happy. Or there's the fat fisherwoman who embraces people and love, oh, love, but no surrender to Krishna. They might chant Hare Krishna, but all they're chanting of Hare Krishna is to avoid Krishna, pretense of surrendering to Krishna. So these are just some latter-day examples of the same thing, which goes on generation after generation. So therefore the teachings of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati are timeless, because the same thing goes on. And especially in Kali Yuga, it's an age of hypocrisy. And in the so-called religious sphere, this hypocrisy is magnified geometrically, it seems, generation after generation. So, all these so-called noble endeavors, religious, humanistic, he denounced. It's all rascaldom unless they surrender to Krishna. That improving the moral life, or the social life, or the intellectual life, or the economic life of the human race, or not even of the human race. There's the imitation well-wishers of all living beings, the ecnologists, Greenpeace, for instance. They believe we shall protect the whole planet so that all species of life can live here happily, envying Krishna. So it's another kind of, we think, oh, this is something very wonderful. You see that they're protecting the, not ethnological, ecological. They're protecting the ecology. They're doing such a wonderful thing. They're opposed to McDonald's, such a wonderful organization. But another, just another breed of rascal. That's a green rascal. That's the only thing. Niropekka nahile dharma na jai rakkhane. This is a quote from Chaitanya Charitamrita about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That without being neutral, one cannot protect religious principles. In other words, one should not be swayed by any worldly opinions. Neutral means he has no friend or enemy in the material world. Everything is judged from the viewpoint of Krishna consciousness. Not that one partakes that we are pro-Bengali or anti-Bengali or pro-communist or anti-communist or any such thing. But not taking any part of any worldly faction, but our allegiance is only to Krishna. He often quoted from Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a verse spoken by Balaram, when he went to persuade the Kauravas that, who was that? They kidnapped Samba? Kidnapped Lakshmana? Lakshmana. Lakshmana's a poison. Yeah. So that time the Kauravas, they didn't want to agree to Balaram's overtures. Let's make some compromise here. So at that time Balaram, he became angry and he said that foolish, stubborn rascals who cannot respond to reasonable entreaties, they should be punished with a stick. They should be physically punished. So he often used to quote this. Although he didn't actually have his disciples do such a thing. The principle that persons who are, they call themselves rationalists, but they don't respond to any reason. They have most unreasonable ideas. People used to ask him, because there are statements in Shastra or in the writings of the Acharyas, just like in Chaitanya Bhagavat, Srila Vrindavan Das Thakur has written, Tobe lati maro tar shire upore. So kick him in the head. This is Vrindavan Das Thakur said that those who don't accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, they should be kicked in the head. And similarly, Narottam Das Thakur has made such statements. Sei Pashu Boro Duracha. Nitaina Balilo Moke Modulo Shamshana. What's the line before that? Sei Pashu Vidya Kuli, I can't remember. Sei Shambandana Hija, Brita Janma Gelata. Sei Pashu Boro Duracha. Who doesn't have a relationship with Nityananda? He is he's just an animal and a rascal. So people used to ask, that doesn't really seem to fit with Trinada Pisunachana, Tarora Pisunachana. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explained that Vrindavan Das, the author of Chaitanya Bhagavat, showing his extreme mercy upon persons who refuse to accept the transcendental position of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Vrindavan Das Thakur is showing them the highest mercy by kicking them in the head, and thus, even though they don't want it, giving the dust of his lotus feet upon their head. By force. So he himself had this attitude that people don't want Krishna consciousness, so ram it down their throats. But at the same time, we should understand it wasn't that he was simply calling people names, not like that at all. But he would discuss philosophically very strongly, make his points very strongly. But his points were all based on Shastra and if anyone is sane or rational, his explanations of Shastra, they would appeal to any reasonable, intelligent person. He wasn't simply dogmatic. People are afraid of absolutism. They're afraid that someone's absolute and then they'll become like Hitler or Bin Laden or something like that. So they're afraid of this. But absolutism in itself is not wrong, that means, because there must be something that's right, just like 2 plus 2 equals 4. We take an absolute position in the examination. No other answer but 2 plus 2 equals 4 will be accepted. It's an absolute. It's because it's a fact. So what is the fact? That should be preached, but he didn't ask people to simply accept him just because I'm saying it. But rather, he would propose on the basis of Shastra. If the people didn't accept Shastra, then he would speak to them in a manner that they, to convince them they should accept Shastra. So this is in the spirit of the preaching mode of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of his followers. Chaitanya Dara Kanta Kara Vichar Vichar Karale Chitte Pave Chamatkar. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami has asked his doubting readers, those who may doubt what he is saying, that you please examine neutrally, with your open-mindedly, what is the glory of the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. If you examine this open-mindedly, then you'll be astonished to see that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy, how it far surpasses that of his compassion, his work for uplifting the human race, far surpasses that of any other purported welfare workers. So, here's a quote from Prabhupada about Srila, his guru, Maharaj. No compromise. Ram Krishna, avatars, yogis, everyone was enemy to Guru Maharaj. He never compromised. Some God brothers complained that this preaching was a chopping technique and it would not be successful. But we have seen that those who criticized fell down. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he wasn't concerned about transgressing what was accepted social etiquette, that we should be very polite. I mean, he wasn't a loudmouth or like someone like he was extremely aristocratic, and his mode of speech was obviously very high, kind of most highly educated. People prided themselves on their learning. They were humbled by his learning, because he was so much more learned in practically every field that anyone approached him with. But he didn't mind that people criticizing him, because he was criticizing others. Even he would speak against highly esteemed religious leaders. He wasn't concerned with what is considered mannered, well-mannered behavior. We find among so-called cultured people, they're very well-mannered and very polite, but he wasn't, and this is considered the sign of respectability and the sign of culture and civilized behavior, that one is a proper, just like in modern India, one is considered a complete human being when he has a master's degree and can speak English fluently, and he should have a job in a multinational corporation also. So working for some gang of beef-eaters somewhere. So these are considered the signs of a highly cultured person. But Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, although he was certainly the most cultured and aristocratic person, wasn't interested in simply going along with the social norms for the sake of being considered polite. But rather he spoke criticizing anything, whoever he met. He immediately urged them to, discussing with them, presenting the philosophy of Krishna consciousness, he urged them to immediately surrender to Krishna. This is the truth. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. You are his eternal self. You should surrender to him. And if not, why not? This was his attitude. So it didn't leave any room for, people to, well, yes, maybe. Why maybe? Why not? It didn't leave any room for making specious arguments to try to avoid it. So he very much polarized the whole of Bengali society at that time, especially in Bengal. He is very polarizing. The people, you either accept him or you don't, people would turn against him. Or they'd avoid him. So he's very polarizing. You know, which side of the fence are you on? No sitting on the fence. Deva Asura Eva Chai. There are two kinds of people in this world. The Deva, the godly person, and the demoniac. So his preaching would polarize people. That which side do you want to be on? Are you going to be a devotee? Then you have to do what I say. You don't want to be a devotee, then you join the rank of the Asuras. Or your position is there is confirmed. So this polarizing factor, it may turn many people very much against him, to the extent that people wanted to kill him. He knew that the so-called respectable orthodoxy that he was opposing, that they looked very polite and respectable as long as their position wasn't threatened. For instance, the caste Goswamis, who they had a monopoly on initiation in Vaishnavism, so he broke them. He started initiating all different kinds of people. In other words, he was taking away their clientele. He was affecting their economic status. Not only that, he was exposing them as rascals, the caste Goswamis. So they didn't like it. They were going on, you see, very respectable gurus and giving initiation and accepting donation and making a show of being devotees. But when they were exposed, then their real nature came out, and they wanted to kill him. And it was quite plain that if he was to preach like this, that he was certainly at risk. But that didn't deter him. He went on speaking. He showed that the so-called polite, respectable people who didn't like, that's another thing. They didn't like what he had to say. They couldn't rebut what he had to say. So they would, instead of, this we find even today, that if someone can't defeat the philosophy, or if they're of someone else, they're clearly wrong, then they'll divert the attention by saying, well, you shouldn't speak so strongly. This is not proper. You shouldn't say like that. Or they'll try to find some fault in something, and in this way avoid the position of which exposes themselves as being bogus. So, like this, he exposed, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he exposed the harmonizing tolerance of this material world, of materialistic people, that I won't criticize you, and you won't criticize me. You do your nonsense, I'll do my nonsense. And I'll praise you, and you praise me. So people are afraid to criticize others, because then their own faults will be exposed. They say, what about you? Their own faults will be exposed. So the other side of that is that if you do, they say, yes, we should respect all opinions and live in harmony. But if you point out the faults, in their mode of thinking or acting, then they will come back so strongly. We're not tolerating what you have to say. We'll tolerate all opinions as long as you don't point, as long as your opinion doesn't diametrically oppose our opinion. And if you oppose our opinion, then we'll come back at you that you're intolerant, you're not harmonizing, you're a fascist, and so many different things. So there were attacks on his life. And he had to face constant criticism. He was criticizing others, and they would come back. And so much opposition all the time. It's not pleasant. If you can imagine, all the time people are trying to find faults in you and criticizing you and not. All the time you see that you have to live in an atmosphere of tension. So it's easier. Yeah, just, you know, let's be nice to everyone. I'm okay, you're okay. That's one famous quote. or I'm okay, you're okay. This was brought to Prabhupada's attention. He said, that is not our philosophy. Our philosophy is, I'm okay, you're not okay. How can we speak so boldly? I'm okay means, I am rascal number one, I'm a dog, but I'm a dog of the Vaishnava. So I shall simply speak the truth that my spiritual master has spoken. And I shall follow that, what he has spoken. I may be the most, I may be very fallen, but by the mercy of my Paramahamsa spiritual master, that I am on his order, I am duty bound to speak the fact. Just like Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, at one of his Vyasa Puja ceremonies, he said that, well, what's going on here? In his speech, he said, what's going on here? The visitors, they may be surprised. What kind of person is this sitting on a big seat above everyone else, being praised by others, and not only being praised, but listening very carefully to those praises? What kind of brute is this from the zoo? What kind of figure is this? This appears to be wholly contradictory to Mahaprabhu's injunction. What is this? What's this got to do with Vaishnavism? So then he explained in some detail how I have been enjoined by my Gurudev to preach this message to others. He has taught on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Jari Deko Tari Kaha Krishna Upadesh, Amar Angyai Guru Ayantara Idesh. Wherever you go, wherever you meet, instruct them in the science of Krishna. In this way, become a guru and deliver the land. So, on the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu received through succession, I'm taking the role of a guru. So, the role of a guru is to teach the disciples Shastra. Then in Shastra, in the course of teaching Shastra, he'll come in the 11th canto, he'll come across the verse, Acharya mam vijaniyam navamayeta kari chitya martya buddhya suyeta sarvadeva mayoguru. That Krishna instructs Uddhava how the brahmachari is supposed to, what is his attitude towards his guru? He should consider the Acharya non-different from Krishna, not disrespect him in any way, not consider him an ordinary person of the material world, because in all respects he is the representative of all the devas. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said that it is that when he comes to teach this verse, what should the guru teach to the disciple? Should he, instead of teaching what Shastra states, instead of teaching what Krishna states, should he instead not teach what this verse says, and said that you should give the guru a few strokes of the horsewhip? Should he, in other words, you should beat him? Should he teach the disciple like this? Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati said, I have not learned such insincerity from my Guru Maharaj. If I was not to take this position of instructing you on the order of my Guru Dev, then that would be insincerity. And he said, taking strength from the lotus feet of my spiritual master, I will stand against all shallow, worldly hypocrites who speak of humility but do not follow the order of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So this was the fighting approach of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, willing to fulfill the mission of his gurus, even by imperiling his life. But it wasn't that he hated anyone or he had bad feeling towards anyone. Rather, he was the true well-wisher of all. He didn't go out with the intention of becoming the enemy of anyone. It just happened, because people of this world, they take as their enemy one who threatens their sense gratification. All these wars are going on all over the world. so much violence and fighting. People become opposed to each other, especially anyway they people have a, in the material world, people have a basic attitude of envy towards anyone else. But then when one person or when one group of people threaten to impinge upon others' sense gratification, then they become enemies. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he didn't go out to become the enemy of others. He had no bad feeling towards others. It wasn't that he was feeling his sense gratification threatened by others. But rather, he became the enemy in the sense that he saw that everyone is denying Krishna's sense gratification. Everyone is supposed to live for Krishna's sense gratification. And therefore, they have become the enemies of the truth. They have taken the position of the enemy of Krishna. So Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, he spoke the truth, and by speaking the truth, if one speaks the truth, he will certainly attract many enemies from the ranks of those who want to live a lie. Everyone in this material world is living an illusion, and they don't want to be jerked out of that illusion. So Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, as the well-wisher of all, he spoke in such a manner that persons would either have to accept what he said or become his enemy. Practically, it was like that. He spoke so strongly and unpleasantly only to benefit persons whose perverse attitudes could not otherwise be altered. In other words, if he didn't speak so strongly, there was no hope of such persons' attitudes being changed. Or even if their attitudes were not changed by such strong speaking, he spoke in such a strong manner, at least to expose such rascals and to protect others from being cheated by them. So his activities were all benevolent. He explained that although his approach might seem aggressive, he was compelled. Aggressive means that which can cause harm to others. But he explained that he was compelled to speak so aggressively to avoid harming others. For the worst type of violence, he explained, worse than beating others, worse than killing others, is to refrain from delivering Harikatha. So if you say just like, you know, Hitler was very bad and all these, very, because he was very violent. But according to Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur's analysis, there's not that much difference between Hitler and Mother Teresa, because they both failed to give Krishna. To fail to deliver the truth to a jiva and to withhold knowledge of his constitutional position is the worst disservice, comparable to concealing information of a vast inheritance due to a destitute. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's uncompromising preaching forced his disciples to either adopt the same stance or disown it, as they were repeatedly upbraided by indignant persons as to why their guru spoke so demeaningly. But lest his followers imbibe his trenchant style, heavy style, without the deep compassion from which it was born, he revealed to them his own heart's feelings. Let me not desire anything but the highest good for my worst enemies. So there's lots more. I'll just read out a little bit more on this subject and then we'll go into questions. So despite the Gauriya Math's tremendously, at that time, was tremendously powerful, very ingenious, multi-pronged preaching campaign, relatively few people were serious enough to wholeheartedly accept Bhaktisiddhanta Vani or to follow the path of Bhaktisiddhanta. But even while trying to give Krishna consciousness to as many as possible, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati's aim was not so much to collect numerous followers as to find out even one sincere soul. He would say, even at the expense of all the properties, temples and mugs that I have, if I could assist even one person in becoming a pure devotee, then I would consider my mission fulfilled. Now many people would approach his disciples and give a little advice. They would say that your Gurudev is very powerful sadhu, but if he would just be a little bit more sensitive to public opinion, a little bit more positive outlook, if he would look for the good in others and not complain so much, not be so insistent on always speaking the straight facts, then surely today no other religious leader would have as many followers as he. If he did not forbid all kinds of intoxication, for instance, then thousands of people would surrender to him. What's the surrender? I do what I like and surrender. Gurudev, Gurudev, Gurudev. Do you think you could just clean the floor for me? Gurudev, I don't have any time, see you later. He could have been, they would say, he could have been tremendously successful by just adjusting to smarter practices and not going against all this idea of breaking the caste system. If he could have just be friendly with all these different groups instead of attacking them, their gurus along with their followers would have submitted to him and he would have become the universal leader of all of them. He just adjust a little bit. No, he wasn't interested. He wasn't interested in becoming the popular leader of a group of hypocrites. He didn't see his role as a guru as becoming the most popular, well-known, famous. He simply wanted to present, here is Krishna. Does anyone to take? There's a condition. What is that condition? You have to follow Bhakti Siddhanta Vani. So, let us pray at the lotus feet of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, the lotus feet of Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, that we may always be fixed in Bhaktisiddhanta Vani and live by that, practice that, and preach that life after life without being fixed in Bhaktisiddhanta Vani. There is no Krishna consciousness. So, any questions? Do you have any written questions? All right, speak loudly. You have to speak so that the devotee sitting way over in the corner there can hear it. Speak to him, don't speak to me.
You were mentioning that Bhaktisiddhanta, when he was preaching, that he wouldn't flatter anyone's false egos and like that. But we see that when we're preaching, specifically when we're distributing books, then in order for them to take a book, often the devotees will, try and flatter their false ego a little, and in that way, they'll take a book. So is that a bona fide way of doing it? Because we know we're benefiting them by them taking one of Prabhupada's books.
Did everyone hear the question?
Yeah.
Then the one in the corner said no.
Sorry.
Sometimes we flatter people in distributing books. Is this bona fide? Well, he himself would many times quote, what is that? Hey Sadhavam Sak. Let's see if I can't remember it now. Hey Sadhavam. Anyway, it doesn't matter that much.
exactly to get this sense, but well, we don't have that.
So this verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati would say, he would quote this often, and our own Srila Prabhupada would also quote this often. That's one of my not so many personal memories of Srila Prabhupada, that in a darshan, someone asked Prabhupada how to preach, and Prabhupada paraphrased this verse from Prabodhananda Saraswati. He said that you approach people and you tell them that, my dear sir, you're such a wonderful person, there's no one as great as you, and then they will think that, and then that person will think that, oh, this person, he has understood. So what do you have to say? Then he'll be willing to listen to what you have to say. So then you tell him that, having got his attention, you tell him, my dear sir, you simply give up all your hogwash ideas and simply surrender at the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya. So this is a preaching method. To attract their attention, there may be a little bit of flattery in the beginning, and then you give them the information. So giving a book is an excellent way of giving the information. Many people ask, well, Prabhupada himself, that last Pandal series of lectures he was giving in Pandals in Bombay in 1977, so strong, so heavy. So many people got up and left. So afterwards, Prabhupada said that actually book distribution is the better preaching, because it doesn't directly offend people so much. The same thing is in the book, but it's a little bit indirect. People may not feel threatened so much. They're talking about these rascals, fools, and nonsense. If you think they're talking about someone else. Yeah, other questions?
You saw one hand up there on the
corner. What is the right attitude to have for spiritual appreciations? Like, Srila Prabhupada used to say, chant, dance, and be happy, but we should have this enjoying mood. So, how is the right?
What should be our attitude in Krishna consciousness? Prabhupada would say, chant, dance, and be happy. So, having heard his seminar, should we now adjust that to chant, dance, and be unhappy? Don't be happy. Don't enjoy. Yeah, we should be happy in the service of Krishna. But that happiness, that should come from the attitude of service to Krishna. When we take Krishna consciousness as something mundane for our own enjoyment, then it becomes mundane. That let me sing so nicely, I will sing so very nicely, others will appreciate my voice. I will be recognized as a great singer. So this kind of attitude is mundane. So it's not that among Bhaktisiddhanta's followers in the Gaudiya Math, there were not blissful kirtans. It wasn't that everyone was walking around looking really serious and grim. It was very blissful, because it was Krishna conscious. But Krishna conscious comes from the mood of surrender to Krishna. As I see it, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was preaching in an atmosphere where there already was Krishna conscious of some kind spread very widely, but it was mostly all some cheating revenue, become mixed up with materialistic concepts. So he more concentrated on blasting out the insincerity. Whereas Prabhupada was picking up people with no idea of Krishna consciousness, and his approach was more find a spark of sincerity and fan it. So the same message but a different approach according to necessity. Of course, we find that Srila Prabhupada also, when his disciples were becoming a little mature, he would chastise them more. He would point out the defect also. You have to come to Krishna, you have to chant, dance and be happy. But don't take it as something for our own enjoyment. But that happiness in Krishna consciousness also, we have to understand, definitely in Krishna consciousness, it's a happy movement. But that we shouldn't mix up, in the words of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, chit jarava, trying to mix the material with the spiritual. We should distinguish between genuine compassion and mundane compassion, genuine enjoyment and mundane enjoyment. Yeah, please.
Maharaj, yesterday you were talking about women's liberation, power, they can creep into ISKCON. It seems like we've allowed it in, and we're allowing like the Mataji's to sit opposite and next to the Prabhu's during Prashadam time and walk along with the men in Parakram and Brahmacharis walking down the road and talking to the Mataji's. Is this Kali's agents creeping in, and what can we do if the authorities aren't saying or doing anything about it?
It's a pretty tough one. I've been working on it for the last few years. It could threaten to spoil our whole movement, but it's all based on the mundane concepts of equality. What could you do? I don't know. Protest to the GBC. That's what I do. It's an ongoing process. And preach against it. One lady, I gave class the other day and I spoke a little bit about this. You might think I'm on some kind of trip or something, but I guess I am, because it's a very clear infringement of the everything Shastra says and the whole Vaishnava, not only the Vaishnava, but the whole Vedic cultural tradition. So certain persons are saying, well, the Vedic cultural tradition doesn't apply in the modern age because we're different, we're modern and the society is different. But Prabhupada wanted to institute the cultural norms by which we would create a different society. Not that we have American culture and kind of add Krishna consciousness to that. Rather, American. I mean, I'm not against America per se, but it just happens to be the place from which this anti-culture or non-culture is being vigorously exported all over the world. So, it doesn't work, because that culture is for sense gratification. It's for going to hell. So if we think that, the Vedic culture is no longer relevant and we'll just follow American culture and say, well, Prabhupada also went along with it to some extent, but he made it very clear that we have to introduce that culture which is conducive for spreading, for being Krishna conscious, but first of all, for living as civilized human beings. So the indiscriminate mixing of men and women is it enhances the tendency to fall down. Therefore, not only in Vedic culture, but even among our forefathers, if you go back maybe two generations, it was just like I was seeing this morning in the Russian class, how all the men and women are all sitting together. And it just reminded me, when I was a kid going to church, this is in England, where they go to church on, we all used to go to church on Sunday, and then Sunday means roast beef. So this is among people who don't have Vedic knowledge. But even in the church, the men would be on one side and the women on the other. So they had that much discrimination.
But now we're more, we've lost us and we think that this is just something which doesn't apply or it's not necessary. So it's a very serious problem, because what it comes down to, it actually becomes Shastra Ninda. And they say that the Shastra doesn't apply to us. We only accept the spiritual portion of Shastra. I discussed this in the class this morning, this whole topic. So, Shastra Ninda, and it means that we're totally compromised with Kami society. I mean, even there are many religions even today which mundane religions, they don't have a clear concept of Krishna, who understood this point much better than we. That by the arrangement of material nature, men and women have different bodies and different psychophysical capacities, and there should be discrimination on this basis. He says there should be no discrimination. No discrimination means Mayavada. And that we're all devotees, so it doesn't make any difference. And then we're all devotees, then why are we falling down? Because we're not on the platform of seeing one on the spirit soul. Therefore, we require discrimination within society. We require separation. Anyway, this is a very big topic. To one lady who questioned me after the class about this, she was saying that, well, I only spoke one side, what about the responsibility of men? I said, yeah, that's also, of course, it's very Shastra is taught to responsible men, it's not taught to hippies. That's the problem. So, anyway, I said that if she would remind me that I could possibly give a seminar on that next year's Mayapur Festival. I gave a seminar, I've given such seminars in different places in the world. I gave one in Russia. Family life in Krishna consciousness on it. Devotees appreciated that and they transcribed it and they made it into a booklet which was subsequently banned. Because it's considered that the Karmis won't like it. They don't like it, our so-called devotees. Although this is getting off the point a little bit, you may say that, well, you know, who are you, sannyasi, to say all these things, but I must say that I can say that based on the instructions that I have received from Srila Prabhupada, I am I'm a great marriage counselor. I don't get into all the ins and outs, so I just tell them, I just tell people, look, forget it, there's no people come to me asking for blessings for divorce and all kinds of things like that. Just tell them, forget it. No way. You have to live together. You hate it, even if you throw the whole house at each other every day, no divorce. And then they have to, if they can accept that, then somehow or other they have to adjust, and maybe they'll only throw the house at each other once a month or something. They have to live with each other somehow or other, and they adjust. It's not a very difficult thing. People did it for generations. There was no question of divorce, even in the Western society. But now with our modern ideas of equality and fairness and liberality, and now the whole society is total chaos. We should be grateful to Prabhupada for teaching us these things, because we're coming from the animal platform. Anyway, any other question? Somebody hands up. Written question? What is wrong in gurus using charisma or his mood in preaching? Using charisma? Someone may be charismatic, but that charisma shouldn't be some show, not a circus show. One has charisma, that means the natural attractiveness of the soul, not that it's simply putting on some show. How would Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur preach today? Well, he is preaching today through his... he preached in the 1960s and 1970s through Srila Prabhupada, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, And as much as we preach according to the guidance of Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, then we are following the line of Bhaktisiddhanta. Otherwise, I don't want to speculate that if he came today and then what would he think? How can we make such a speculation? In the course of preaching Krishna consciousness, we find many people who are just interested in giving some donation and not interested in pure bhakti. Should we continue preaching to them, which may give them some sukriti, or should we stop preaching? Sometimes devotees that don't say that they are nonsense and just allow them to get some sukriti by giving their money to spend for Krishna. What should be our attitude towards such people? If people want to give a donation, give them a book. Simple. Sometimes this is said though, well, we're taking people's money and in this way we're benefiting them because we're engaging it in Krishna consciousness. Then we better engage it in Krishna consciousness. Don't engage it in our sense gratification. If we want to benefit others by taking their money for Krishna, then we have to engage it in the service of Krishna. Prabhupada said, if we spend one farthing for sense gratification, we go to hell. It's right there in perfect questions, perfect answers. We take donations from the public, we spend one farthing for sense gratification, we go to hell. So, yeah, what else?
Martin.
Yeah, she's writing it down, okay.
During the seminar you mentioned how revolutionary Bhaktivedanta Maharaj was in preaching. Yeah. For example, when he invited the governor of Bengal and he brought some
Bengal
and some meat.
So, well, that wasn't so much a revolutionary preaching, but that was his revolutionary approach in preaching. He wasn't preaching that it's all right to eat meat.
So where's the border?
Where is the borderline?
Yeah.
That requires intelligence which is coming directly from the spiritual platform. We need not make it a policy to do like that. There's no particular material formula that we can apply. I've heard in Sohotra Swami's webpage that it is well known that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was a regular meat eater. Can you please explain? Well, actually this is not usually, we don't usually preach that Bhaktivinoda Thakur was eating meat, but it appears from his own autobiography that he was doing so at one point. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is, well, just like I began this seminar by saying that we can understand the greatness of Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada by understanding who produced him, Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur. So the greatness of Bhaktisiddhanta Swami Thakur, that was produced from Bhaktivinoda. And definitely from his writings and his activities, there is no Bhaktivinoda Thakur is his Vaishnavism is immeasurable. It's extraordinary. It's awesome. It's even among so many great devotees who appeared in this world, the contribution of Bhaktivinoda Thakur is difficult. It's difficult to imagine, or we can hardly begin to understand what is the greatness of his contribution and the greatness of his personality. So in such cases, there may be other cases also, like Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, they appear to have become like Muslims. Their names were changed to Muslims, so we can understand that in some ways they must have accepted the customs of Muslims. So his doing so, that any apparent non-Vaishnavism in the behavior of a pure devotee, we can understand that this is to not that he was a materially conditioned person, but this is to demonstrate the efficacy of Krishna consciousness, that a person who apparently was mundane can become fully situated in Krishna consciousness by the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a liberated soul eternally, not just liberated, he's more than liberated. So any such apparent deviation from his liberated position, and that should be understood to be just like some show, just like Arjuna appeared to be in Maya. So his own consciousness at that time may have appeared to be Maya, but that was arranged by the Lord for the Lord's own purpose of demonstrating the greatness of Krishna consciousness. Please explain the difference between fatalism and unalloyed surrender to Krishna. Well, unalloyed surrender to Krishna doesn't mean that one simply gives up all endeavor in the world. That was Arjuna's misunderstanding. Unalloyed surrender to Krishna means that one surrenders one's intelligence to Krishna and takes direction from Krishna how to act in this world. It doesn't mean that we just stop doing anything. I don't know if that explains the... Maybe the question should be expressed more in more detail. Is preaching to go back to Godhead a form of liberation? Yes, but it's not the form of liberation of that of the salvationists, which was condemned by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He used the word elevationists for followers of Karmakanda, those who want to elevate themselves to the heavenly planets, and salvationists, those who desire liberation. And although in personal liberation is most condemned, but in the pure Bhaktisiddhanta, even the concept that I, just like we find, for instance, in Madhva Sampradaya or Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, that they praise the Lord, His mercy is that He gives us liberation. And then we go to the spiritual world. But the concept is not so clear that we, as in Gaudiya Vaishnavism, that we don't serve Him for any benefit that He gives us. Rather, Aslishava Padya Tampina Shrava Dashana Nama Hatanka Rutiva Yatatata Bhavidatata Lampato. Mat prana natas to sevanapra. This was the platform of preaching of Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. It may seem very strong, but he wanted to bring people up to the topmost level. His preaching was like that. So this term, back to Godhead, was actually coined by Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. He said, back to home and back to Godhead. This is the motto of the Gaudiya Math. So back to Godhead means to be situated in our constitutional position of service to Krishna. And that automatically includes liberation. So is it a form of liberation? Yeah, liberation's included. But it's different to the attitude that, let me get liberation for my own benefit. Yeah.
A question in regard to this previous question about British government who meditating.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't say all these things.
No, my
British government meeting things. It's surprising. It may be difficult for us to accept.
My question is how we should discriminate, because now we can hear also in ISKCON about women with liberation and chanting Bhagavad Gita or magic.
Chanting Bhagavad Gita?
That someone changes that, and we should not.
Oh, I see.
And motherships or whatever. Some
motherships. Oh, I'm not supposed to talk about that. GPC or.
But from our position, it's very difficult to discriminate.
Our position is difficult to discriminate. Why? We have Shastra, everything's clear. What's so difficult? Bhagavatam is Vedam Vasa Vatra Vastu Tapata. No, what is that? By which reality is distinguished from illusion for the benefit of all. Where does that come? What's the sentence? Tapata. Srimad. No. What is that verse? Reality distinguished from illusion? Vedam Vastram Atra Vastu Shivadam Tapatranam Srimad Bhagavate Mahamani Kute King Bhakra Vishwa Sadhya Vidya Vrita Jeta Kute Vishwa Shushi Vitaksha. Now, where does that come? Anyway, yeah. So, Krishna, the knowledge of Bhagavatam is that which kicks out cheating religion and gives us the knowledge by which we can discriminate between reality and illusion. So, having taken the knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam, we should be able to discriminate between what is real and what is not real, what is correct and what is not correct. It shouldn't be such a difficult thing. It may become confusing if we if we're not clear in our understanding. It's like yesterday I was saying that we think that what a guru says must be correct because he's a guru. But it's round the other way. Because he speaks what is correct, therefore he's a guru. So if someone is supposed to be a guru, even if they are an ISKCON guru, there's no such thing as in Shastra as an ISKCON guru. It's not that because one's in ISKCON that he has some special kind of prerogative. It's the same rules for everyone. So, it's not that because someone is authorized to initiate an ISKCON that automatically means that everything they say is correct. It has to be seen according to Guru, Sadhu and Shastra. And many people have left ISKCON and left devotional service because their guru talked nonsense and they believed it, instead of studying what is stated in Shastra. In Shastra it stated, Guru api avalitasya kaya kaya majanata utpanna prati pannasya parityaga vidhiyate. That even if one is a guru, that means he's situated in the highest worshipful position, but if he speaks nonsense, even if he was speaking sense previously, but he starts to speak nonsense, or even if he speaks 98% nonsense, but 98% sense, but 2% nonsense. This is the upper sampradaya. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur was so much against it that you see the upper sampradaya, they'll chant Hare Krishna, many of them, they wear tilak, they have neck beads, they accept Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Supreme Personality of God. It may be just some small thing they're totally rejected. Just like this Nitai Ghosh, Radhe Sham, Hare Krishna, Hare Ram. They also chant Hare Krishna, we're told. They're moving their beads and mumbling something. They say they're supposed to be chanting Hare Krishna. But you can't hear it because they say you shouldn't chant loudly. So they made up some mantra. So everything they do is, you know, they have temples and they worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Radha Krishna. So their philosophy is almost the same, but they have a little admixture of nonsense and it's all rejected. So we should understand on the basis of Shastra that if someone speaks nonsense, then he's not a guru. It's not because one doesn't become a guru by having a stamp, rubber stamp on the head, guru, authorized. But guru by following the parampara and speaking according to Shastra. So we should be aware of these things. Otherwise, anyone can say any nonsense and people just go along with it. What should Vaishnava do with someone who committed homicide, killing someone? It's too general a question. It's usually the law deals with such people. What are Vaishnavas going to do with it? I mean, we can preach to them. What should the punishment be for him? Well, we're not in the position of meting out punishment to murderers. Better we leave it to the law. If the law is willing to follow what we have to say, then Manu is there, yes. But actually, I discussed this particular point just 2 days ago in this session. So, if you like, you can ask someone who is here. Anything else?
I have a question because Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, he was preaching also very boldly, but from his disciples we know that his mood or his behavior was very sweet and very mellow on personal level.
Very sweet and very mellow. What do you mean by mellow? Mellow sounds like one of those terms that you know, just simply, I'm okay, you're okay, smile, be sweet, and everything. What do you mean by mellow?
He was gentle.
He was gentle. Something.
So, in your searching, did you find some information about Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj? Like, we know his preachings, and they are very strong, and etc. But on personal level, how he was dealing with devotees? Always in the same mood, or?
It's described, the question is that was he always very heavy like that? Or was he sometimes gentle and sweet also? This question appears to me to come from a kind of mundane outlook that we think people have different moods. And sweet is nice and heavy isn't. He was always sweet. Mellow, I don't know what that word means. So it's not that, you know, he was in a bad mood or something like that. His devotees said that wherever he went, the atmosphere of spiritual bliss carried everyone along. He infused everyone with a mood of service. Otherwise, how could his mood have spread so widely, so quickly? People were surrendered. He inspired to go out and preach this message and take all risk. So there was an atmosphere of great spiritual bliss. But he didn't mollycoddle others, you could say. Mollycoddle? You know what that means? It means being mellow like this. Mollycoddle means to just, you know, pat them on the back and just, you know, somehow or other the show should go on. What is it? One of his disciples who I interviewed extensively, he was a young boy when he joined the monks. He was 16 years old. And 16 years old boy in those days, and even now in general in Bengal, and especially in those days, it didn't mean they were already streetwise and they already had fathered 5 or 6 children and stabbed 2 or 3 people to death. And the average 16-year-old at that time was more like a child. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati used to reciprocate with him like that. He used to give him gulab jamun, rasgulla, prasadam. And sometimes if someone would chastise this boy, he would restrain them. Although he himself would sometimes chastise that boy, Jyoti Shekhar. So it was all on the platform of love. in the modern age, we have a very, very shallow, sentimental concept of what love means. We think love means, just like parents in the West, they think, well, we just give our kids some sweets and that shows our love for them. But they don't take the time to train them or discipline them. They just let them indulge their senses. But this isn't love. But rather you'll find that I know many cases of people who they tell me, like their father or their guru or some senior devotee who trained them, was so strict with them, and they express such affection for him because they feel they experienced his love in his training, in his not allowing them to be nonsense. So this idea that you just be sweet and you smile at others and that's love, that Prabhupada also told that story of the young man who was taken up to be hanged for being a dacoit and a thief and a murderer. And then he'd been brought up by his aunt, who indulged him, just let him do whatever he liked in the name of being nice to him. And then he called her up and asked her, just as he's standing on the scaffold, you put your ear next to my mouth. And she thought he wanted to say something. He bit off her ear. He said, I'm just punishing you. It's your fault I'm getting hanged to you for all my crimes, because you never instructed me how to behave properly. So this is a very mundane idea that love and niceness means you smile. Well, of course, it's not that he didn't smile, but definitely his wound was very grave, no doubt. Very grave. So, Prabhupada said, I'm 80% more lenient than my Guru Maharaj. Seems to me, maybe more. I don't think any of us would have made it. I don't know. I don't think so. In the Gaudiya Math at that time. Maybe not. One question, one instruction of Srila Bhaktisiddhanta that you want us to carry home with us? Question one. I've been giving dozens, why only one? In Vishnu Priya temple, well, that I was saying, he himself, Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, said the basis of all my teachings is Drig Drishya Vichar. I gave a whole 2-hour lecture was about that 2 days ago. The basis of all his teachings. Understanding who is the seer and who is the seen. And there's another question, that's another thing which I already discussed. In the Vishnu Priya temple at Navadvipa, we find Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decorated with a flute in his hand, not playing a flute. Is it acceptable? It's the same Gauranga Nanda. It's not acceptable. To pure devotees. I read somewhere.
I read it vnn.org website. You know, they had taken out an article, teachings of Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And one line said that he was saying that Krishna does not accept food from the hand of a person who is not chanting 1 lakh times a day.
Yeah, well, that's quoting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that.
But most of us are not chanting.
I'm not chanting 1 lakh names. In fact, Prabhupada told us to chant 16 rounds. Well, in this regard, there was one of his disciples who said to Srila Prabhupada, because they were all busy also, they didn't have a japa period. In the Gaudiya Math, there was no japa period in the morning. You chanted whenever you found time, they were busy service. So, one of his disciples, Sarveshwarananda Brahmachari, who later became one of his sannyasis, Jajjaba Maharaj. So he said to Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, said that you say that everyone should chant one lakh of names, but I don't see anyone in the mat except yourself who's chanting one lakh of names. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, you don't see, but I see. And he couldn't work it out. You see people and you see them all day and they're doing various things, and maybe they only have their hands in their bead bag for 20 minutes or something. So how are they chanting one lakh of names, 64 rounds? So Jajjaba Maharaj said that he considered this, and by the mercy of Guru, he came to understand that those who are engaged in service on the order of Guru, that is non-different from chanting and fulfills the same purpose as chanting. And he didn't actually tell all his disciples to chant 64 rounds. I asked many means, maybe I've met about, not that many, maybe 12 or 15. And one of them told me that he told them to try and chant 64 rounds. Others he just told, some he told chant 16 rounds. Some he told, you just saved the bees and said chant. So he said different things to different people. Then, anything else? Otherwise, we'll finish the...
Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj, you can see, was completely well-versed in Shastras. So therefore, he could preach uncompromisingly. Sometimes, like, we are new to ISKCON and we are just studying Srimad Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita, so how we should preach, like?
How should we preach if we don't know Shastra? Janma Shartha Kari Kara Para Upakar. Prabhupada also writes that one should know what is in Shastra, otherwise one will be embarrassed and insulted. These are the words Prabhupada uses when he tries to preach. So for now then, better you'd better distribute Prabhupada's books, which is always the best preaching anyway. And you can preach to people, but if you're not able to answer, then you tell them that you come, so you can say, I'm quite new here, so you come and meet more of our experienced devotees. Or one system they had in the Gaudiya Math at that time was that everyone would, all the brahmacharis and sannyasis had to go out every day for collection. And then they'd go door to door and ask for some collection, people to give big cup. And they would preach to them, they're supposed to verbally say something to them. Then if people objected or they had any question, they would answer. And if they couldn't answer, then every day they had Ishta Goshti with all the devotees. So after they'd go out, they'd come back at midday, take lunch, the prasadam, midday prasadam. And then after that they'd have this Ishta Goshti. They'd read from Shastra and explain it. And then there'd be discussion of different points. So someone might, one brahmachari might bring a question, that this question was put to me, I don't know the answer. What's the answer? So then one of the more experienced devotees would give it, and then he'd go back the next day. So he'd tell them that I don't know the answer, just wait, I'll come back tomorrow and give you the answer. So like this, training in preaching. Hare Krishna, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Sarveta Bhakta Vrinda ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.